The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's RBC Heritage. And joining me to break it all down, as they do each and every Monday, Greg Ducharme is here. What up, Greg?
What's going on? I hope everybody can keep our job tonight is keep the energy up, right? This is another great tournament, one of the great golf courses, another unique golf course out on the PGA Tour, and we actually have a pretty good feel. So I'm a little tired from last week, I'll be honest, but at the same time, I'm feeling great.
Little Masters hangover. You're absolutely right. This is I was looking at this field like Friday or Saturday or whatever, and I was like, wow, this is actually pretty decent, especially the week after a major. That is a testament to the course and to the event. It's an absolute staple on the calendar. And also rounding out our group for today, Sia Najad. Sia, welcome back. Good to have you.
Yeah, Rick, I was thinking this tournament was going to be like a lot of obscure names that I was going to be picking and really having to like dig deep on the models and whatnot. But I mean, there's a lot of good names at the top. And frankly, there's a lot of good names at the bottom too. So I'm excited to talk about all of them.
Yeah, there really is. Before we jump into that, we're going to have to spend a bit of time on the course. It's one of the most unique courses that we get on the PGA Tour. But before that, remember that the pressure continues to mount as the world's top teams compete for soccer's most coveted trophy. The Champions League is down to the final eight, and you can stream every match live on Paramount Plus as they cut the field to four teams following this week's second leg of the quarterfinal stage. And I've heard there are actually picks out on the Early Edge feed right now for that stage. And you don't want to miss a minute of world-class soccer, including PSG versus Bayern Munich and Real Madrid versus Liverpool. Paramount Plus, it's live sports, it's breaking news, and a mountain of entertainment. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it for free. Gentlemen, Harbor Town. We know this course. It is unique. Greg, you said that word. I said that word. I assume the reason that we are saying that word is because of how small these greens are, and then also these tree-lined fairways that really require you to be exact with not only your drives, but also with your approach shots.
That's right. You look at this golf course, and it's not just tree lined. Augusta National is tree lined as well. There are a lot of tree lined golf courses on tour, but this one, the trees have a way of overhanging, which is it's really cool. And there's a lot of dog legs as well. So dog legs and trees limit your line off the tee, and they create what's called target golf, where you have to hit the ball not as far as you can, but you have to hit it a specific distance into the proper spot in the dog leg to avoid getting blocked out. Now, everybody inevitably will get blocked out, so there's going to be some shot shaping involved, and there's going to be some things like that. But you're working it to those really small targets that you mentioned, Rick. And this has got to be top two smallest greens, right?
It's number two. So this is
number
30,
one, Pebble?
30. Yeah, Greg, that's why you are the professional, my friend. This is 3,700 square feet on average here at Harbor Town. Pebble is 3,500 square feet on average. The only course with smaller greens.
Yeah, so it creates a pretty cool test. And then the other thing that I like about it is you also have an element of the water, right? You get out to Calabogie Sound when you get on 18, and there's a couple 17 starts to kind of get exposed. So you have a mixture of tree lined, really tight. You kind of feel claustrophobic, and then you get out to the sound, and there's some open, which exposes you to wind. And one thing last year that we saw was no wind, and that was because it had a summer date. So we're going back to April this year, and I think you're going to see more windy conditions that produce winning scores that are more like what we're used to seeing, which is, you know, the 13, 14 under par winning score rather than what was Webb 22 under last
22
year?
22 under. Yeah.
So it'll be good to watch.
Greg, I love exactly the way that you described this place, because Sia, when I ran the model, when I pulled up the course model on rickrungood.com, and I'm showing it right now, the two things that stood out to me or stood out to the numbers were that the players that have had the most success here over the years, they do two things really well. They drive the ball. Driving accuracy. In fact, there's only three courses on the PGA Tour where driving accuracy was more important. And then driving distance, there was only six courses on the PGA Tour where driving distance is more important. And off the bat, those two things don't reconcile, because usually the longer drivers of the golf ball are less accurate and vice versa. But here at Harbortown, exactly what Greg describes tends to happen, where you have to be in the fairway. You not only have to be in the fairway, you have to be in the correct portion of the fairway. And a lot of guys are going to be hitting their second shots from the same spot. So that's where driving distance comes into play. The guys that hit it further usually have shorter clubs in from similar locations. So it's kind of like it messes with your brain to try to think about what type of player could have success here. But I think Greg described well, and I think the model backs it up.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to weight one over the other, in my opinion, it's going to be that driving accuracy, because you are trying to strategically matriculate this golf ball into the cup, if you will, and making sure you're in the right part of the fairway to, you know, hook up your approach to the greens, to the small green at that. So my emphasis is going to be, as far as off the tee is concerned, my emphasis is going to be on accuracy. And I'll tell you, in my model, I'm going to have a heavy weight on approach, as you might expect.
As I would expect. Now, looking at some of the players that would fit that mold, and we're going to go through them, but in terms of driving accuracy on the PGA Tour, I'm looking at the last 50 rounds, Sia, and you can tell me if you'd rather go shorter, if you'd rather go a bit longer, but Brendan Todd is actually the number one player on tour in the last 50 rounds for all of these golfers, hits nearly 75% of his fairways. And then these are names that we would come to expect, right? These are very much the mold of golfers that would have success at Harbortown. I'm talking about Brian Stewart, Ryan Armour, Sung Jae-im, Jim Furyk, and then Colin Morikawa rounding out the top six.
Yeah, which, by the way, makes it kind of exciting, right? Because everybody's in play. And from a DFS and from a betting standpoint, I mean, you can afford to take, you know, put a couple bucks on, you know, a guy that's 150-1 or 100-1 or even 200-1, something like that. As I look at that list, I mean, you're right. Brandon Todd and Brian Stewart, even Ryan Armour, now that I think about it, they're going to be good course fits here relative to some of the other courses. With that said, I'm not in love with, you know, Brandon Todd, for example. I am a Brandon Todd fan. I'm not in love with his game lately, maybe since January. But as I look down that list, I mean, Colin Morikawa, Corey Connors, Abraham Anser, these are all guys that I'm definitely going to be looking at. I see Webb Simpson on that list. Michael Thompson, who you know is a guy that I'm always on in that lower range. So there's plenty of guys on this list that I'm a pretty big fan of.
And then the other thing is, Greg, glad to have you back here.
Sorry about that, guys.
No, it's quite all right. The other thing is, this is a Pete Dye course. So, you know, Greg, there are unique aspects of Pete Dye courses. There are guys that tend to play well at these designs, you know, week in and week out when we get to them. And it is a par 71. So, I mean, you lump all this together. This is like unique aspect here, unique aspect there. It's like, I love this place.
Yeah, Pete Dye offers an interesting kind of perspective. And I do think that to some degree, experience can be important because of what he tries to do. You can gather experience quicker at a venue like this than you can at, say, Augusta National or something like that. Because part of the thing with Pete Dye is how visually intimidating his golf courses are. So the fairways will have a ton of movement to them, and it will look like you can't hit it in this place when you have to hit it in this place. And where you want to hit it doesn't look very friendly from the tee box, especially at a place where it's very flat here. So you can't see a lot of these landing areas, and you can see some of the penalty areas. You can see the trees. You can see all that stuff. So that adds to the element. And some guys don't have a problem with it, and they can play that target style golf that Pete Dye requires. And there are other guys that really struggle with it, and they're not particularly fond of it.
We're going to look at the cheat sheet. We're going to go through the tiers as we normally do. But Sia, while we're talking about Pete Dye courses, what I've pulled up is the last 6 years, all the strokes gained data for Pete Dye courses. And there's one guy who's played 47 rounds who is head and shoulders above the rest of the field at Pete Dye courses. And he is someone that burned us all last week. It is Patrick Cantlay. Can you stomach going back to Patrick Cantlay at this point?
Well, first of all, you ran that for the last 6 years. I'll tell you, because I've been on this very page and I just ran it since, I guess it was January 2020. And for the record, for those of you that want to know, he still rates out really high. I think I'm looking at it right now. He's like number 6 on the model on Pete Dye courses. So the answer to your question is yes, I can stomach it. I mean, I'm not going to be the guy that's going to be all in on Cantlay, but I'm going to have him in some lineups. I mean, if you look at his track record here, it's really outstanding. And beyond that, listen, everybody's entitled to a bad couple of rounds of golf. Even Patrick Cantlay, even Dustin Johnson, even some of these studs that missed the cut at the Masters. So yeah, I'm okay with Patrick Cantlay. I mean, he rates out well on Pete Dye. If you take off a Pete Dye filter, if you will, he's still going to rate out well on approach, off the tee, around the green, all of these metrics that we always rely on. I mean, are you going to get an ownership discount? You know, these days, DFS players are a little bit more sophisticated. So people are going to be on Cantlay to some degree, but it's not nearly going to be what it would have been if Cantlay made the cut last week. Nearly made the cut.
And it feels different because he played so poorly. Like, he was never in it. You know what I mean? So I feel like there are going to be some jaded owners of Patrick Cantlay compared to like a Dustin Johnson, who played fine, made a couple of bogeys late, misses the cut, and that's all she wrote. But let's talk about that 10K range, Greg. It is led by Dustin Johnson. He's 11,600. Patrick Cantlay is 10,900. Our defending champion, Webb Simpson, at 10,700. Colin Morikawa at 10,500. Here's a name I didn't think I was going to say. Cameron Smith is 10,200 and Daniel Berger is an even 10,000. I've got questions here, but we'll start with this one, Greg. Who in this 10K range are you most excited about?
Oh, man. So this is a tough one because there's questions about all of them and you love all of them. But at the same time, I kind of feel like everybody in this range is a little bit overpriced. And I feel like it's a little bit of a stretch. Cantlay, if you take out last week, looks great. I mean, you'd be circling him three times, but he shot 79 in the first round. And as you said, Rick, he burned many of us because it wasn't expected. But last week missing the cut wasn't expected for a reason. And it's important to remember that. So I think Sia brings up a great point. It's okay for a guy to have a bad round. You could call it one bad round. Shooting 73 at Augusta isn't necessarily a bad round.
He has also played here three times and he has finished third, seventh, and third. So it's like, if you're willing to forgive quickly, because this feels like a really good spot again.
If you talk to his coach, Jamie Mulligan, he's kind of a class. He's like a modern classic in a way, where he's modern in the fact that he hits it a really long way, and many of his he has a very modern looking golf swing, but at the same time he likes to move the ball against the wind and create all these shots and hit it high and low, and he's what his coach classifies as a shot maker. And a shot maker can do really well around here because there are so many opportunities and you're so required to move the ball around. The one thing is that Augusta National is a shot maker's golf course too, so it's quite interesting. I think Cantlay is worth the risk in a lot of cases, so he's still kind of in the DFS game theory strategy. I think he's a good play. I think Cameron Smith is playing great. I was hoping he was going to be around 9.9 or 9.8 this week because he's been playing so well lately. He's got a great short game and he's great on the greens, which bodes well here. When greens get really small, guys miss a lot of greens. So short game becomes very important. And he's just confident right now. I think it was tied 10th last week. And he's just been continuing the great form that we've seen from him for quite some time.
Let's mine into Cam Smith. This was the most interesting thing to me, Sia, when the pricing came out, because what I'm showing right now, so what I have here on rickrungood.com is I have the last 4 years of DFS data, of their prices, of how many fantasy points they've scored, all that good stuff. And Cam Smith has never been more expensive than 9,800. That was the 2019 Sanderson Farms. We are in uncharted territory for Cam Smith. And it is not that it is not deserved Sia. Greg's absolutely right. He finishes 10th at the Masters, 17th at the Players, 11th at the WGC. But when you compare this and try to reconcile it with his odds for the week, he's like the 11th shortest odds, but the fifth most expensive price. How do I balance these things?
Yeah, this doesn't really make any sense. I mean, I just sometimes I see a price like this and I'm wondering if somebody's trying to tell me something like Cam Smith is the play. Because, I mean, by the way, his strokes gained metrics, you know, they're not great. OK, certainly not relative to some of the guys around him. And by the way, his course history here is, I don't know, I'd go as far to say as it's kind of bad. I mean, two missed cuts in a row and then a 32 and a 29 in the last 4 years. I mean, that's not really painting a picture of a guy that I'm going to entrust with this kind of price tag. I mean, I'd prefer the guys around him, frankly.
I was excited to play him at like 8,900, Greg. Like, I was very excited for that. I was just so shocked to see him come in at 10-2.
I look at his numbers for the year and I'm surprised by them. The strokes game metrics that Sia mentioned, because you see all these great results and you see his name pop up on leaderboards and you see him hitting great shots, yet he's 125th off the tee. He's 75th approaching the green, 57th tee to green. And you realize that he kind of gets it done around the green. He's 24th putting, he's 16th. And it's an unreliable statistical makeup, yet at the same time it's yielding very consistent results. So I think Cam Smith kind of leaves those of us who analyze with numbers and data, it leaves us puzzled in a way.
That is certainly a statement that I would agree with, considering the fact that Daniel Berger's cheaper. We can jump down. Let's stay here in the 10K range for a second. I mean, Daniel Berger is a flat $10,000. He's another guy coming off a missed cut at the Masters. Sia, it's easy to make the cut at the Masters. It is, because it's a smaller field and more guys get through, but it's also can be difficult because the margins are so small. How many times over the course of the week did we see a really good shot that if it was 12 inches further in one direction, it'd be next to the pin, but because it was where it is, it rolls 30 yards down into the fairway? I mean, the margins are so small. So are we just kind of taking a blanket and saying, if you missed the cut at the Masters, it's okay, we're ready to buy back in? Or does it matter how they did it?
It matters a little bit how they did it. It's funny for me to say that, because I just said I'd probably jump right back on Patrick Cantlay. But a guy who missed the cut, Daniel Berger, who I like a little bit better than Patrick Cantlay for a couple different reasons. I mean, if we look at how Daniel Berger missed the cut, it was really putting. I mean, he dropped a few strokes putting in those first two rounds, and I think that really was the difference for him. So he's normally a really good putter, so I don't really have a problem with him missing the cut last week. I think his approach numbers were actually pretty decent. So with that said, I'm fine with Daniel Berger. I'm okay with Patrick Cantlay, but I like Berger a little bit better if we're going to rate the guys who missed the cut last week. I mean, I guess we haven't talked a lot about DJ, but I do like those two guys, and I'll tell you, I like Webb Simpson quite a bit as well.
Yeah, so
I think Webb's hard to go away from. But I like Berger too, but are we concerned at all with his injury? Or do you think last week was all simply just a putting issue? Are the ribs a concern at all for either of you guys?
They're not to me, particularly because match play, they didn't seem like a concern either. I mean, he played really, really well in match play. He didn't go as far as he could have, but if I was going to see a problem with the ribs, I think it would have been at match play.
I think I agree with that. The strokes gain numbers that we might reference for the Masters are certainly not official. The Masters does not release those. They do not share them with the PGA Tour, but we are able to take the shot by shot data and give some really good calculated estimates. So I agree, Sia. I have Daniel Berger on my site losing three strokes putting at the Masters, which would have been his worst putting performance since the 2019 Houston Open. So that would have been a pretty big outlier for Daniel Berger. Let's circle back and talk about those big boys, because I feel like we didn't do enough justice there, Greg. I mean, we've got Dustin Johnson at 11,600. He missed the cut. He didn't get out of his group at the match play. He didn't play all that well at the Players. He didn't play all that well at the WGC Workday, and he has not finished inside the top 15 in his last three trips to this event. And unfortunately, we really only rate Dustin Johnson for super high finishes. So what do we do with this guy who is seemingly not in all that great a form?
Yeah, I agree. And I think Dustin Johnson, you know, I've been noticing a lot more emotion out of him lately ever since last year. I guess we're kind of still a ways away from that being a year out, but maybe 6 months out. Past 6 months, I've been seeing a little more emotion, a little more fight in him. It looks like he cares a little bit more. It just outwardly, he's showing that a little bit. But I think that right now is turning into frustration. And especially on the greens. Last week, he had 6 3 putts, which is just it's just way too many. And that's what led him ultimately to miss the cut. And well, I think he's 148th in strokes gained putting on the year. This year. So you remember the win in Saudi Arabia and he putted terribly. I mean, coach was on and he said it was an embarrassing performance on the greens. That was the word that he used. And, you know, it's pretty accurate. I mean, he didn't make anything and won in spite of it. So I look at what Dustin Johnson is doing this year and I'm starting to see a little frustration. And now I'm seeing him go to a course that that isn't kind of, it doesn't really fit his style. I don't think it's a course he likes, even though it's in his home state of South Carolina. And so I'm kind of a fade on DJ.
You think it's just a sponsorship obligation? I mean, he's got to show up here. He's an RBC guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has something to do with it. His record wouldn't indicate that he'd be playing the week after,
right?
The week after the Masters. It's not like a place where he loves it. Maybe Travelers the week after U.S. Open. I think that would be a place he may be really interested in going to. Maybe, but you know, there aren't many the week after a major that you're itching to go play. So I do think it definitely has something to do with the sponsorship.
Statistically, this would be the first year that he's lost strokes putting in like his last 6 or 7 years. So the numbers bear out what Greg is seeing. And then see, you know, Webb Simpson, we gloss over him just because I'm assuming there's nothing but positives to say about him. Like, I mean, this is the perfect course for him. He's had plenty of success. He is the defending champion. He's coming off another great finish at the Masters. Like, I just glossed over him because I figured everybody loves Webb this week.
You're right. And it's almost the opposite of what you see with DJ right now, other than the fact that he's also an RBC Heritage sponsored guy, but probably kind of enjoys and thrives in it maybe more than a DJ does. So yeah, I like Webb Simpson a lot. I mean, there's not really a bad thing to say about him. His form was a little checkered at the beginning of the year, but it looks like he's rounded into form. So yeah, all aboard Webb for sure.
So real quick on Webb, please. The one question I would have on him is the drop in the strokes gained approach number, where last year he was either fifth or sixth last year. He was sixth last year. And then this year it's up to 84th, which to me is the difference in a guy that's contending to win every week and a guy that's not winning, not necessarily playing terrible. It's not a horrible number. Do you think that's more from earlier in the year when he was struggling a little bit? Are you seeing that number kind of climb up and he's recently improved with the irons, or what do you guys think?
We can answer that question. So let's see what Webb is up to, because Greg is absolutely right. This would be his worst approach season. I mean, since I have in my database, which goes back to 2016 for approach numbers. Now he's been a little bit better around the greens, which kind of makes sense. But what is he doing recently? Well, he did not strike it all that well at the Players Championship. He lost 3 strokes on approach there. But again, these are match play numbers and these are unofficial Masters numbers. He's looked really good in those two events. So 3 of his last 4 starts, Greg, have been a little bit better. But you're right, dating back to the end of 2020, it was very un-Webb-esque, where he had a stretch of golf from the Tour Championship to, I'll even say, Waste Management, where he didn't look like himself. So I think it's getting a little bit better, but I don't know if we've if we say, hey, 3 out of 4 is good enough for us to say he's back.
Well, you pair
in the right direction. Go ahead.
Exactly. I was going to say that you pair that with the fact that he is trending in the right direction, but also that his course form here is excellent. First last year, the defending champion, then 16th, 5th before that, 11th before that. So he's clearly comfortable here. He's got the right game for this particular course. And those approach numbers, 3 out of the last 4. I mean, those were pretty good numbers on approach.
They certainly were. Let's bop down to the $9,000 range. This is my favorite. I love this. I love this range. Everybody here, essentially. Will Zalatoris, 9,700. Terrell Hatton, 95. Corey Connors, 93. Paul Casey, 92. Matt Fitzpatrick, 91. And Sung J.M., a flat $9,000. Greg, let's start with Will Zalatoris, who just doesn't stop. He just does not stop. He's $9,700. He goes out. He finishes runner-up at the at the Masters. Now, I do have a little bit of a concern because I want to tie this back into something that you had said earlier in the show about how like, you know, the overhanging tree situation. And if there is any flaw in Will Zalatoris' game, it's that he sprays it off the tee. Now, he hits it far enough to get away with it, and he has a great approach play, but he's 161st in driving accuracy. He hits less than 56% of his fairways. I'm nervous about that.
I understand your concern, Rick, but when you combine a guy that has distance like he does, 22nd now in driving distance, hits it over 307 yards. He's a long hitter and he's hitting a very low percentage of fairways, but there's a correlation there because he's now hitting drivers. And when you look at a guy who's fifth in strokes gained approach the green, that's a player who can be accurate. It's just that he's not, when he's hitting a driver, his concern is in accuracy. So he's 25th strokes gain off the tee. So their strategy, and I say there, he works with the guys at Decade Golf, and they they have this this strategy that is extremely aggressive. And I mean, look, the strategy works. It's the modern day game of golf where you go for it, right? You hit driver, you get yourself as close as you can, you give yourself all the opportunities. And you saw him play that way at hole number three this week. And every hole this week, but accuracy isn't their primary focus. You get to a week like this and it asks you for accuracy. It demands accuracy. And I think they're going to come up with a strategy that works and maybe a little bit of a different strategy. And I don't think it plays away from his advantage the way it would have for Bryson if he were in the field, or the way it does for DJ, because he's such a strong iron player. He's just got to get the ball in play. And then I think he can have at it.
I think this is the right take. I think you're absolutely right about this. I think that he has leaned so much into the strokes gained numbers and what the best thing to do is. And it's why his strokes gained off the tee number, he's 25th. This is the perfect illustration of how strokes gained off the tee works. He's 161st in driving accuracy, but he is 22nd in driving distance. That is why he is 25th in strokes gained off the tee, because he makes it up there. And it's not like he's going to take that same mentality and that same strategy to every single golf course. He's going to be standing on the tee boxes at Harbortown and like, well, I've got a different strategy this week. I think that is 100%, Greg. I love it.
If you're fifth approach the green, you're accurate. You can hit the ball where you're looking. It's just a matter of, is that your priority? Is the fairway your priority? The fairway isn't always your target when you're hitting with a driver, especially with all these courses where the rough is low. It's not always your target. So I think that is by design. And I think he is a really accurate ball striker.
I love it. There are two other names in this 9K range that I'm most excited about, Sia, but I'm not ready to reveal them yet. I want you to reveal yours first.
So I have a feeling I know what one of yours is, but I'll tell you, by the way, that Will Zalatoris take was really good, and it kind of changed my mind. So because I was going to be off Will Zalatoris, now at least I have somebody to blame, Greg, if he crashes.
There you go.
So
that's right.
Thank you for that.
You can put that blame on me.
No problem at all. So a couple guys that I like, I mean, I wasn't really on Paul Casey last week, but I do like him this week. And I do think he's a good course fit. He's good on Pete Dye courses as well. So Casey's a guy I'm going to be on. And speaking of ball strikers, a guy that's just going to land it in the fairway, probably where he should. And a guy who's great on approach, might have a little bit of a shaky short game, is Corey Connors. Those are the two guys I like the most. Honestly, when you said, Rick, you loved this 9K range, I got to be honest, I'm not super in love with it. And the lineups I actually did a couple with like two 10K guys, and then I went straight to the 8Ks, high 7K, low 7K range. That was just my immediate preference. The only other guy I think I like here that has a ton of upside and had a really good Sunday yesterday, and a guy I've been on a lot but hasn't really paid off, is Tyrrell Hatton. I think that's a guy, I said it last week, I said Tyrrell Hatton is a guy that if you roster him in the Masters, he can go out and win you a GPP because he has that upside. He didn't exactly do that, but he did okay. And I think he's a guy that might actually be in the same situation this week in terms of potentially winning you a GPP.
All right, you hit the two. So Hatton is a guy who his 18th last week was his best finish at the Masters, and he did it kind of flying up the leaderboard on the weekend. You know, that place has been kryptonite for him. So the fact that he had his best result, I think, is a good positive takeaway, and he finished third here last year. But let's do the Paul Casey thing, Greg, because here's what I see. I've got the round-by-round strokes gain data up here, and again, these are estimates, but they are very strong. This is exactly how we would calculate strokes gain numbers. I have him losing over the first three rounds rounds of the Masters, about 3.5 strokes putting. And I don't know if you noticed this, Greg, but on Sunday he came out and he putted left hand low and he gained 2.5 shots on the field. Now, I know these guys are quirky and they try things, and I have no idea what type of putting grip he is going to be using this time around. But if I just gained 2.5 strokes on Sunday on the greens at the Masters and shot one of the lowest rounds of the day, I'd probably go forward with that.
I understand what you're saying.
that's what Greg says before he tells me I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I can't say you're wrong. There's nothing to say you're wrong here. It worries me because there's two ways to look at a change in putting. When it's before an event, it's something, and you've maybe had some time off. It's okay. Like Tony Finau is a perfect example. He went from the left hand low, or from the claw, which he was using prior, went to left hand low for Masters. Okay, well, they've been figuring something out. That's what it tells me anyway. Without speaking to anybody, they've been practicing and they figured out that left hand low works better. When you change mid tournament, it's like, I just got to do something different.
Yep.
Right. And it's not as calculated. It doesn't appear to be as calculated. And that's what you do when you're desperate. And sometimes it can light a spark, but it doesn't always last. And that's my concern. Now, the positive on Paul Casey is how well he's been striking it. Mm-hmm. I wonder, he hasn't played too much golf, but I just wonder if this is an exhale week for him. I felt like there was a lot of buzz, a lot of hype about Paul Casey heading into Masters. And his game was in the form where it could deliver. The putting didn't deliver. So he didn't have himself. And I just wonder if he's kind of taken an exhale this week. And I hope that's not the case, because I want to like him, but I just kind of have that concern. Like this past week was a peaking week for him. He was trying to peak and it just came up a little bit short, and we may have a little bit of a lull before he gets kind of gets going for PGA.
Look at this. Look at this headshot I have of Paul Casey. That is a sly smile. He knows something's coming this week. Doesn't it look like he knows something? Oh,
am
my God.
Go left hand low.
Right. That's exactly standard? What I'm thinking. I'm Maybe exactly
claw?
What
I could go claw.
Don't do the call, Paul. Just go left hand slow. The rest of this 9K range, Sia, you said you didn't like it as much. So I don't know. I mean, this isn't really like the ball strikers. Well, I mean, I guess you get Zalatoris, Hatton, Connors, Casey, Matt Fitzpatrick, who kind of does it in a different way, but he's been much better. As much as I love Sung Jae, probably not going to do it for me this week. We've been watching those irons really kind of fall apart for a month or two now. So we'll figure out Sung Jae later, but is there anybody else we should talk about here in this 9K range before I move us down to the 8?
I mean, the only guy that I'd really consider here is Matthew Fitzpatrick, particularly on this coastal course. If the wind picks up, we know Fitzpatrick is good in difficult conditions. You know, that's a guy that's probably third or fourth on my list in the 9K range. But I have no problem with him. That would be the only other guy I'd touch on.
I might put him a little higher on my list. I think Fitzpatrick's playing great, and I think it's a really good fit for him. A place that kind of demands accuracy, where Augusta National does not demand accuracy. It demands accuracy in a different way. It favors distance a little bit more, I would say. So it doesn't necessarily fit his game, and especially favors trajectory. This place, you can hit it a little bit lower, and it's actually welcomed. So I look at Fitzpatrick, who's in great form, 34th last week, mm-hmm. 9th at the Players, 10th at the API, 11th at the Workday. Those courses are somewhat similar to this. And I'm thinking Fitzpatrick's having a great year. And I think this is a perfect golf course for him.
I think I agree with that. I like Fitzpatrick quite a bit. He's playing well. He's doing it. Okay, we're going to do it. We're going to go down to the $8,000 range. We're going to find value. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. And we're back. March Madness and the Masters may be over, but the sports calendar never sleeps. The NHL trade deadline, daily NBA, NHL and MLB action. We've got the RBC Heritage Tournament, NFL draft news and rumors, UEFA quarterfinals. I could go on and on. And you're home to stay in the know for all of it. It's CBS Sports HQ. CBS Sports HQ is the only only sports news streaming service that's completely free. How to watch CBS Sports HQ? It's easy. It's available for free on your computer, your mobile device, or your connected TV via the CBS Sports app. Or if you're more of a YouTube person, subscribe to CBS Sports HQ on YouTube for all the latest sports news videos on demand. But personally, I never, ever miss a big story in sports because I turn it on first thing in the morning and I leave it on all day long while I'm working. And I'll leave you with this. If you're a sports news junkie like me, no sports network is faster with breaking news than CBS Sports HQ. Greg, that's true. Something happens in the world of golf, we get a call, we get a text right away. We're going on HQ. They're the fastest.
Let's go. We need you. Can you be ready in 3 minutes? Does that give you enough time?
I say, give me five. They say no, four.
Okay, I'll be there in one.
Right, exactly. Wow. They say
I'm actually
they
ready right now.
I'll call you. $8,000 range. Sia, it is led by a man that I think is going to be very popular this week. His name is Abraham Answer, Tommy Fleetwood, Brian Harman at the top. And it goes down to Kevin Na and Matt Kuchar. It's a fairly small tier, but of these golfers, who do you like the most?
Yeah, you mentioned ball strikers in that 9K range. I mean, there's plenty of them in this 8K range too. And it starts with Abraham Answer, who's striking the ball really well, and who, by the way, finished second here last year. So Abraham Answer's a great play. And also, if you run now, if you just run the Pete Dye filter on Rick Run Good, just to back to January 1st of 2020. He's going to be somewhere in that top 10 in terms of, and by the way, the other two guys I like are really good on Pete Dye courses too. And that is Brian Harman. That's another one who I think is a good course fit for this particular course. And a guy who missed the cut last week, Sergio Garcia. He frustrated a lot of people, but I'm not going to come off of him just because of that. I understand the putter is a big issue with Sergio Garcia, but the ball striking is there. And the course history here in particular with the fifth place last year is also there.
Pete Dye dating back to January 1st of 2021. Brian Harman, the best in the field. He's played 12 rounds. He's getting 2.6 strokes per round. That includes the match play data as well. Greg, that's got to be music to your ears. A Brian Harman reference on the pod, and you didn't even have to bring him up.
Yeah. Look, the guy is playing great golf right now. I wonder what the emotions of last week was like. I'm sure he's a little disappointed with 74 over the weekend. But at the same time, a tied 12th at the Masters is a great finish. And it's his best finish there. So he's got to be really confident. And then you back that up with his T5 at the match play, where he made 8 birdies in a row to get into the Masters, and the T3 at the Players before that. This golf course and the American Express, by the way, another Pete Dye course, T8 earlier in the year. So, I can totally understand where your numbers come from. And I think Brian Harman fits this place perfectly. Distance isn't his strong suit. It's not his asset. It's not what he leans on. And he leans on accuracy. He's really good at getting the ball in play. And that's something, and he's a Georgia guy, right? So he's not from far from here. So I think it's a really good fit for him.
6, 7, 8, 9. I'm counting the straight events that Brian Harman has gained strokes off the tee. I'm going to give him 9. Technically, he lost strokes in Phoenix, but he lost 0.06. I'm going to give him that one. We're going to say 9 in a row off the tee, which is kind of surprising considering we know he's not a long hitter of the golf ball. So that means he's finding a lot of short grass. The rest of this, what are we in? $8,000 range here. See ya. Tommy Fleetwood. I still have a lot of questions about the putter. I still have a lot of questions about the way he hits the driver, but we're starting to see an iron resurgence from him. Kevin Na is a bit streaky down at the bottom of this tier. Matt Kuchar has great course history. Anybody else that we should be touching on as a possible play or fade for this week?
I mean, I don't have a problem with Matt Kuchar or Kevin Na. I don't think I'm going to be rostering them, but I got to admit, the way Kuchar's playing and his success on this particular course, I mean, it's a nice price for him. Fleetwood is one of those guys that he probably won't be super high owned, but he is starting to emerge as the Fleetwood that we saw a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago, as opposed to the Fleetwood we've been seeing the last 6 months or so. And his course history here, he doesn't have much by way of course history, but I believe it was 2 years ago, in 2019, a 25th place finish. You know, not terrible. I don't mind Fleetwood, but again, it's going to be the way I would rate this 8K range. It's probably going to be Anser, Harman, and then Sergio.
Matt Kuchar is a flat 8,000 to put a bow on this. So his course history, I mean, 10 consecutive years. I think he's actually up to like, I want to say 16 cuts in a row, something pretty crazy, but he's made at least 10 in a row. He's had a runner up finish in 2019. He has that 11th place finish in 17, a ninth the year before, a fifth the year prior to that. No, by the way, just went out and won this thing in 2014 as well. Greg, when you look at the rest of this $8,000 range, I was mentioning some of those names there. Maybe we'll throw Billy Horschel into the mix. Maybe we'll throw Lee Westwood into the mix. We can throw Harris English into the mix. Is there anybody else here that we should be considering?
Well, just to give you an idea on Matt Kuchar, just to circle back there, 2003 was the last time he missed a cut here.
Oh, I knew it was a long time ago. Yeah.
So it's actually 16 in a row. So he missed his cut in the very first attempt.
That's right.
And he's made every single cut since. It's That's amazing. Right. It's amazing to look at. And I'm a little bit interested in him. I know he had a really tough go of it on Thursday at the Masters, as many players did. He shot 78. It came back nicely with a 70. But when it gets windy and firm and fast like that for a Matt Kuchar at a big golf course like Augusta National, Thursday was the hardest day by far, and it just kind of got away from him. So kind of like Cantlay, I feel much better about him because the price is so much softer, and I can take a flyer on him. And all of a sudden, you get a guy who came in before the Masters, tied 12th at Valero Texas Open, and had that great run at the match play, and was feeling very, very confident. The only concern with Kuchar is that he's kind of played a lot of golf in a row here. So maybe the missed cut last week was a good thing, a bonus, to avoid walking up and down those slopes at Augusta National for two more days. So I think that was a good thing. I think Kuchar's going to have a really good week.
The only other thing I wanted to point out in this range, and I hate to pick on Harris English because I'm such a big fan, but there is something happening since his victory at the Tournament of Champions. So if we just go and do this, gentlemen, so I've got the field loaded in here, and I'm just sorting this by strokes gain total since essentially his victory. So after his victory, and I'm sorting this by DraftKings price. He is the only golfer basically above $7,700 that is losing strokes to the field in that range. Sia, it is really ugly. If you flip this the other way and you look at only the golfers that have been worse than him, they're all priced $6,900 or less. So you're talking about a Harris English that is checking in at $8,400 and not playing well.
That's true, but correct me if I'm wrong, but the last couple of tournaments, I mean, Harris English has sort of returned to some form. Am I right?
I mean, it's definitely better than what he did immediately after he won, which was miss every single cut. He finished 26th at the API. He didn't get out of his group stage in match play, and he finished 21st at the Masters.
Yeah, not great. But I mean, relative to all the miscuts he was having before that, I mean, I think we might be seeing an upward trend. And if that's the case, you know, maybe you're getting a bargain there. I think that's like a guy that I'm not going to have a lot of. But if you want to have a flyer on Harris English, I mean, I think it makes a little bit of sense.
the $7,000 range, kicked off by Russell Henley and Pete Dye specialist Siwoo Kim. Bobby McIntyre, who's on a stretch of golf right now, 7,800, goes all the way down to our friends Sepp Straka, Mackenzie Hughes, and Harry Higgs. Greg, what are you parsing out of the $7,000 range?
Well, Russell Henley was a guy I was kind of disappointed he wasn't in the Masters.
Yeah,
I was really looking forward to seeing. I thought he would have a great run at Masters. He's sixth on tour for the year, strokes gained approach the green. And he is very accurate off the tee as well. He hits 67% of his fairways, which is 20th. He's eighth in greens of regulation, which is great. And the recent form is, I would say, strong. He nearly got out of his group at the match play, but didn't. He was tied third at the Honda. And he did miss the cut at the Players, but he's had some really nice finishes this year. Tied 11th at the Sony. He had those back-to-back weeks at the CJ Cup and Zozo where he was tied third and tied fourth, respectively. So I'm looking at Russell Henley and I'm thinking this should be a good week for him. After the week off last week, he should come in here ready to go. And I would say he's my favorite in this range.
Since the start of 2020, so January 1st, 2020, not 2021, we're talking about a year and 4 months, Russell Henley is the best player on tour in strokes gained approach. He's averaging one stroke gained on approach per round in 86 rounds. I guess technically there are a few guys that are better, but none of them have played more than 5 rounds. So I'm going to give Russell Henley the nod here for sample size purposes. He's absolutely the best. He's better than Morikawa. I mean, he's better than everybody. Better than everybody. See ya. The 7K range, I'm also somewhat interested in Russell Henley. I'm somewhat interested in Robert McIntyre, who's got a couple of great finishes in a row, including his 12th place finish at the Masters last week. Who else here? Because I see a former champion in Brandon Grace. I see Kevin Kisner, who should be a good fit. What else here?
Well, first of all, I'm a little confused. Adam Hadwin is in this range and Greg didn't even mention his name. What's going on?
Not yet.
Oh, not yet. Okay. We'll circle back. We'll circle back. So I won't say his name. Okay. So Siwoo Kim, it's interesting because his course history here the last couple of years, I mean, a couple missed cuts. So as a quote, Pete Dye specialist, I mean, you'd think he'd have a little bit better of a track record here, but I do like him. And, you know, when I ran the last 36 rounds off the tee, approach, around the green, Siwoo Kim rated out really well in all three of those categories. Again, just the last 36 rounds, a smaller sample size, but I think Siwoo is a pretty good play. I'm always on, especially on a course like this, I'm always on a guy like Chris Kirk. I think he's actually just a touch underpriced, and I think he's starting to emerge. I think Kevin Streelman is a great course fit. He's got good course history here as well. The type of guy that will just plot smartly, intelligently down the course. And so I think he's a good play. And I'll skip right over Hadwin, but Lucas Glover. Lucas Glover has made a lot of cuts. I mean, I think he's made like 7 out of 8 cuts, and he's got a couple tournaments with some major upside. I mean, recently, I think he had a 4th place finish at Mayakoba, which of course was late last year. I think he had a 5th place finish. So he's the type of guy that's making cuts and he's giving you enough upside to justify saying, hey, this is a value play at this price.
Chris Kirk is a name that I had circled. You know, where I try to reconcile guys that played and didn't play last week. You know, we could argue not playing last week might have been a nice reprieve, a week off. Chris Kirk, who's, you know, coming in off a 6th at Valero and an 8th at API, a couple starts prior to that. That, like, it might be a good thing. And then I try to reconcile that, Greg, with guys like Ian Poulter, who played well, almost top 25 the Masters. He's played here a bunch, and in his last 4, he hasn't finished worse than 14th. I start to wonder where, you know, the tired legs start to come out for some of these older guys. But these are the questions I'm asking myself in this $7,000 range.
Yeah, Poulter is an interesting case here because Ian Poulter didn't play the Valero Texas Open. And so he played the match play and he didn't go as far as we expected. He ran into Scottie Scheffler a little earlier. So it's not like he played, you know, 7 rounds of golf there and then went to play the Valero and then went to play the Masters. He didn't really have that stretch. So I'm not too worried about his fatigue factor. I think Ian Poulter is going to come in really nice form. This is a very typical schedule for him to play. Mm-hmm. And I really like what I've seen out of him. He's putting really well. He's clearly focused. And this is a course where it's a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a breather for a guy like Ian Poulter, who is not the longest player. And it's a breather in the fact that you don't have to, you don't feel like you're constantly fighting an uphill battle against some of these longer hitters. Distance is almost taken out of the equation. So a more accurate player like Ian Poulter, a guy who's a really good putter like Ian Poulter, can get into that competitive flow. They feel like he's going to feel like he really has a chance out here. And I like that for him. So I think Ian Poulter is motivated right now. I think the match play performance motivated him, and he's in really good form. So I like him. And of course, I think Adam Hadwin is due at some point soon here for a win. And his course history here, his course history would say that clearly this is the place. T41 last year, T48 the year before that, and
yeah,
T22 yeah. the year before that.
We know the guys who turn their T40s year over year into wins. That happens all the yep. time. I'm convinced, Greg, you have been hired by the Hadwin team. You are now on retainer, I believe. That is correct.
No, I'm only part T. I really wasn't going to bring him up in part knowing that he's still due for a win. My take doesn't change. I think you're going to see him win before, say, June. I'll say June. July just sounds way too. It's like saying Adam Hadwin will win again. So I want to give you a little. I think he's going to win in the next couple of months here. And this is a good golf course for him. But his course history doesn't say he loves the place. Doesn't mean it's not a possibility. But hey, you may want to ride this one out, because I know it's coming. I know it's coming soon.
I don't understand it. I'm going to move on from Adam Hadwin. Sia, there is a guy you mentioned, like the popper ability, right? You know, like I'd almost prefer a guy to, you're going to miss the cut or you're going to finish in the top 10. And for me, that's Dylan Fratelli this week. He's $7,200, misses the cut at the Masters, finished. I guess he finished technically ninth at the match play. That's losing in the Sweet 16. We saw him have a good run at the Players Championship. He's done that a couple of times recently, and he finished eighth here last year, which is always exciting to me. Is there anybody else in this 7K range we need to touch on?
You know, Michael Thompson is, and I kind of agree with you. I think Fratelli has the upside there, but Michael Thompson is a guy that, I mean, first of all, he does have the track record here, which is great, but besides just relying on the course history, I mean, he strikes the ball pretty well. I mean, and he's actually at a reasonable price in this field. It's still a good field, but I think you could very well have him at 7,500. And I don't think anybody would be like, oh wow, he's so overpriced. So I think Michael Thompson is one of those reliable guys. He might lack a little bit of upside, but clearly he's flashed upside here before at the RBC Heritage. So I think that's a pretty smart play.
If you sort by just the last 2 years at the RBC Heritage, Michael Thompson has gained 2.08 strokes per round. It is seventh or so in this field, and third amongst the guys who have played it in both years. Only Webb Simpson and JT Poston, another $7,000 guy, have been better. So if you like just the 2 year sample size of guys that have played well at RBC Heritage, those are some names that you might want to consider. $6,000 range. This is where we got to dig deep, Greg. We got to dig real deep here. We've got Andrew Putnam, Benny On, Doug M, Luke List, Matthew Neesmith. They're at the top. Goes all the way down. This is my favorite part of the week. Let's see who's min priced. Bryson Nimmer, Bo Van Pelt, Luke Donald, and Tommy Gibson, amongst others. Interesting.
Well, I mean, if you're going to take a flyer on a min price guy, you'd be crazy not to take Luke Donald. I mean, Luke Donald's made
more money at this
of dollars at yeah. this event. I mean, he's driving around in a Ferrari just from his paychecks at the RBC Heritage. So he loves this place. He's performed really well there. It doesn't ask for too much distance, as crazy as it sounds. I mean, you're taking a min, you're going min price at this point. It's crazy. But this would be the place to do it. I'm honestly really surprised that he's mid-priced, just because the course history is really, really good.
I'll tell you why. I mean, it's because he's missed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 consecutive cuts.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But
I mean, you're right. Hang on. He has literally made, he has like a Hall of Fame career, not a Hall of Fame career, but he has a career at this event alone.
Yeah, well, he's never won, but he has 5 seconds. He's made $3.8 million in this event. He did miss the cut last year. He was 32nd, 33rd the year before that. He missed the cut the year before that. But then he went second, tied 15th, second, yeah. third, tied 37th, second, third, second. I mean, it's crazy. The guy contends all the time here. So if you're going to go mid price, he would be my guy in the mid price range. But what do you guys think? A little bit higher up than that, a little more realistic, a guy than you may actually expect to get, maybe even contend. Chase Seifert's a guy that I am still interested in, and he's only he's 6,500, and I kind of feel like he's getting gypped. I mean, you look at it, Valero Texas Open, he came in tied 44th. It wasn't great, but Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship gets mentioned every single podcast. Have to get it in there. Tied 18th. The Honda Classic tied third. Puerto Rico Open tied 15th. I know that these aren't the greatest fields in the world. They're not the upper echelon. They're not World Golf Championships. But this is a guy that's playing some great golf, and it's a great price for him.
I will say, first of all, Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship, they should send us on an all expenses paid trip there because we say their names so often. I will say I tried to figure out where I saw Chase Seifert's name, and it's right here. So I'm running so the last 6 years, Pete Dye designed courses, and the top guys were Patrick Cantlay, Siwoo Kim, and then Chase Seifert. And he's only played 15 rounds, Greg, but it's a good, Pete Dye track for him. He's played well at the American Express over the years. This isn't the craziest thing in the world, $6,700.
No, yeah, $6,700. So at his price, you're looking at a guy who's 53rd strokes gained approach the green. That's really his, it's his strength. And he hits nearly 68% of his greens of regulation. So, he does struggle around the greens and with putting, which gives me a little bit of pause, but I mean, we're talking, I think he could be worth a flyer.
And he wears a visor, which is always good to see. See ya. I've got a lot of names here in the $6,000 range that might move the needle, but who does it for you?
Yeah, I honestly think there's so many good names in this range. Even in the low 6K range, I think not for a single entry necessarily, but I think there's a lot of rosterable guys here. Just to name a few, Doug Gim, Matthew Naismith, Stuart Sink, who was obviously playing pretty well, Kyle Stanley, and then you can go even real low. Like Tom Hoge is 6,400. We know he flashes. Jason Duffner is 6,300, who happens to be pretty good on approach. Tyler Duncan, who is classically good off the tee and pretty good on approach, he's 6,100. So there's a lot of Wesley Bryan, who typically, again, I say typically because these guys crash and burn too. That's why they're in the 6K range. But Wesley Bryan's 6,300. Bo Hoge, I mean, there's a lot of guys. Even Danny Lee at 6,200, I wouldn't be, if I was doing 150 lineups, for example, I wouldn't be afraid to put him in a couple.
Stuart Sink's pretty interesting. I liked that name that you threw out. So he is second on tour in greens in regulation right now. It's 73% of them. He's much longer. Wow. Much longer than I would have given him credit for. 305 yards. That's 29th on tour. Stuart Sink putting it out there.
Earlier this year, he gained a lot of distance. He made a couple of changes and he picked up. He got his speed back basically, and that was right before he won earlier this year. What did he win? The Safeway Open, I think it was.
Correct, first event of the year.
So yeah, that's when he kind of got his distance back.
Finished 19th at the Honda's, 12th at the Masters. Those were the last two times we saw him.
Yeah, clearly in good form. I mean, you know, that's nothing to just dismiss. And Stuart Sink, again, you know, he's been striking it well. At 6,700, again, the 6K range is rich with a lot of guys that are actually good ball strikers and typically don't succeed on the longer courses. But on courses like this, they can be in the top 20.
It wouldn't be a first cut pod if we didn't point out producer Jacob's Rory Sabatini, who finished 30th at Valero the last time we saw him and has three consecutive top 25s at this event. And also, as far as we know, signed a lot of autographs for producer Jacob about, what did he say, Greg, 2006 round?
Yeah, I think that was the time frame, which is prime time Rory Sabatini.
If you're looking to acquire said Rory Sabatini autograph, producer Jacob will sell you one, two, or 10 for a low, low price. We talked before we went hot, Greg. I thought Brant Snedeker got into a conversation. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, you are. Brant Snedeker is kind of interesting. He has a nice course history here, and he's been playing not terrible. There's been a couple of nice events. Well, there was a while there where it was really bad for him.
Yeah.
Which kind of concerns me, but I think Brant Snedeker is a viable option.
Finished sixth at Valero, Which you're right. The stretch of golf he had before that was absolutely brutal, but we saw him play well as he tends to do at Torrey Pines. He makes the cut at API. That's difficult golf course, finishes sixth at Valero. Things might be starting to head in the right direction for one Brant Snedeker. Sia, anybody else in the 6K range that we should be considering?
Well, I will say about Rory Sabatini, again, if you go back to like January 1st, 2020, and you just run a Pete Dye filter. Now, like I should have qualified this. These are tee to green numbers, not total strokes gain numbers. But Rory Sabatini is pretty high up there. I mean, he's not in, you know, the top 10 or top 15, but he looks to be somewhere in the top 20. So I like him. You know, we didn't mention, and maybe I'll get your opinion, Rick, or yours, Greg. We didn't mention Luke List. Any love for Luke List? He's 6,900, I believe. And I mean, he has the talent certainly to succeed in this field.
I'm not as excited about, like, I get either. Luke List. I get it. I think that he has historically been a guy who is a good ball striker, terrible putter, team no putt, all that stuff. He's got a third place finish at this event in the last handful of years. He's actually coming off a pretty good result at Valero, but the longer term window for me is not as exciting for Luke List.
He needs wide open. He does great at wide open venues.
I guarantee we will hear it's, I'm pretty sure I've got the right guy. If you want to play a drinking game this week, take a sip every time they mention Matthew Neesmith proposed to his then girlfriend on the 18th green here at Harbortown. I'm pretty sure that's the guy. Do you remember this? Am I making this up?
I think it's somebody else. Cause I know this story, but I don't think it's Matthew Neesmith.
Really?
Who, by the way, in the last 36 rounds, rates out fourth on my model on approach. So
yeah, he's a great
solid player.
Yes. Gentlemen, anybody, I mean, do we need to talk about, I mean, go ahead.
It was Naismith, apparently. Sorry. I'll just go away now.
I was nervous that it wasn't because I've been like saying that for like 5 years that like he proposed to his girlfriend on whatever 18th green. Okay. As far as roster construction goes this week, the 10K range with DJ Cantlay, Webb, Smith is in there. Greg, I'll get to you first because I know Sia's already started making lineups. I feel like I love the 9K range. I could potentially try to load up there instead of trying to take a guy in the 10K, but I'm not positive.
I have a lot of questions about the 10K guys, so I don't hate that play at all.
Sia, you've probably built 40 lineups by now. What do you think?
Yeah, let's cause some let's cause some controversy because I do hate it. I this is the first time you guys know I'm a huge advocate of saying, hey, you can start on the 9K range. It's borderline disparaging to the 10K range every time we do a show. But I'm not saying your take is bad. What I am saying is this is the first time that I'm starting to build with two guys in the 10K range because I like them so much. And what that forces me to do is skip over the 9K range and most of the 8K range and just hit that 7K range really hard. And some of the high 6K range is in play here too.
All right. Well, I've got some work to do building lineups, trying to figure all this stuff out. But for now, let me thank producer Jacob for all the hard work behind the scenes. Let me thank Greg Ducharme, who could not wait till the end of the show to leave. No, I think he had a computer issue. So Greg, thank you very much. You can follow Greg on Twitter at TheRealGFD. You can follow Sia Najad on Twitter at Sia Najad. That's an easy one. And you can follow me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.